Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about the SWOP episode, that's S-W-O-P all the time, episode 4. So thank you for joining us, and I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mike Bloom. Mike, you used to be Jacques. We've discussed the Jacques and Ting Ting thing is over. May I ask that we are now CPA and Tanya?
Okay, yeah, I'm here for it. I guess the question is, who is who? Though I'm trying to ascribe to President Tanya's mantra of speak loudly and carry a sharp stick. So maybe I should take her place.
Yeah, why does she need the stick so sharp? That was what I was thinking.
Exactly. Listen, I know that, you know, we've talked about her being compared to Debbie and Debbie is compared to Coach. So I think she's just referencing her Survivor family tree by coming back from a de facto exile island with a stick. It all makes sense.
I mean, I put that side by side up on Twitter. The sticks are like very similar. They're coming back from this like transformative experience that they had on a different island. Like the similarities were bizarrely accurate now between Coach and Tanya.
And we could also say that she could have said, hey, you know what? I found this idol out on the Island of Secrets. It's this giant stick and you're going to use this for the next vote.
This giant effing stick. I love Nico in that moment. He said, apart from that dangerous looking stick, you've come bearing a secret. Like he seemed a little scared about being by that now massive weapon just right next to him.
Yeah. And just I think he hoped to not tick off Tanya, considering he probably got reports of how much she had ticked off her tribe. So he knew like, OK, this might be a short fuse here. And I want to make sure I'm not at the receiving end of whatever blow may be coming.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Tanya had a transformational episode. Maybe the stick had something to do with it. So we'll talk about it. But yeah, really good episode for Tanya, I think. And but the vote itself was pre-telegraphed. Obviously, we'll get to everything. We'll get to the steers of it all. But I do think there was some really interesting drama here, especially on the new Lao Mei, that could be pretty foundational for votes going forward.
Yeah, I think this is definitely a, you know, they say in scripted TV all the time, like the setting the pieces episode where not a lot happens in terms of action, but a lot is setting up for consequences to come. And there was a lot in this episode. We set up three new tribes. We saw maybe two of them really outside of one having a lot of trouble with Flint once again for some particular reason. But yeah, it's so interesting how the first two episodes we're like, oh my God, Saola, this is a ridiculous group of people. Matt Singh 2.0, they can't keep it together. And now the moniker has completely shifted away to Ta'alo, who these three people, I love the way that the swap worked out for so many reasons. One of them is we now have this tribe where Jacques, Felix, and Tanya, three pretty, you know, over the top and some would say volatile personalities are now mixed up together in this alliance where they just sort of had to shrug their shoulders and say, okay, I guess I have to work with you. But it's going to be really interesting moving forward, considering once those numbers dwindle down, you have people already looking outside of the three. So it just shows that Ta'alo, maybe Ting Ting was the glue or something that held their sanity together, because everything is broken open with that tribe.
Yeah, well, I do think that, you know, Jacques, Felix, and Tanya being on the same tribe, those three in particular are the three that should have, you know, should be oil and water more than any people. I mean, Felix and Tanya, who were openly arguing, and Jacques, who has had his issues now with the tribe as well. I mean, we'll talk about it, but it felt like a very combustible three that the old Lao Mei members didn't really seem to try to crack. I feel like they were just waiting to crack. So either really, really good on Ta'alo or really, really bad on the old Lao Mei for not trying to, you know, at least find a crack there, probably both of those things. But yeah, I think we've learned about not calling Disaster Tribe too early, because Saula now, they seem like the tightest five. They seem mostly in a good position with the swap. Not so sure on the new Saula, but those five, I think, very likely we could be getting a winner from those five, because they seem like in a very, very good position right now.
And it's so interesting because those experiences really did bond them together, as opposed to, you know, Ta'alo, who is almost splintered apart because of tribal council. And I agree that I think maybe in another setting, I think we can certainly talk about how I do feel like Rose in particular got dealt a pretty bad hand just in the number of twists that came their tribe's way over the course of this episode. But there were a couple things that her and Dural maybe could have done. You point out one of them trying to wedge, you know, something in there between those three. You'd have to assume that it was, you know, pretty perceptible in the air how much these three people were sort of arguing with each other about what to do. And so you'd want to capitalize on that. Maybe it's a disadvantage of the fact that the two of them had not been to a tribal council yet, so they didn't really know how to work that portion of game. But it really, the latter third of the episode was really the purple tribe versus the purple people, and the purple tribe won out here.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, well, we'll talk about what they could have done. It was odd to me that Rose would come back from the challenge and be like, well, you guys aren't splitting up. You'd never give up your numbers. I'm like, well, maybe they will. These people all have really big issues with each other. We have to just put that out there. And then also to not really be throwing Darrell under the bus. Like, those are your two options. Mm-hmm. Throw Darrell under the bus, or because the idol thing obviously wasn't panning out and that was kind of a disaster. But like, or you try to find a crack or find a swing vote, knowing that Tanya was just on Island of Secrets. Very, very, you know, hard position, I guess. But I really think there was more that could have been done. I think Ta'alo, there are other cohesive units. You know, if it was Felix, Dante, and Kubis on that tribe of three, I'd be like, hey, that's a really bad position for Rose and Darrell, because that's three people who will never flip. But with it being those particular three people, Felix and Tanya, Jacques and Felix, and like all the issues there, I really think there might have been options, and maybe it speaks to Rose and Darrell's game that they didn't find those options. But before we get to all the new tribes, let's just kind of start at the beginning and set up the pre-swap stuff. By the way, swap in my notes is always S-W-O-P now, out of respect to the show and the way we're meant to be spelling and pronouncing things. Because I found that scene after Tribal Council really, really interesting. I was happy that Jacques was as hard on himself as we were on him last week. So at least he gets it. At least he knows. Like, he was doing the post-episode podcast in that scene being like, I really screwed this up. So at least he got it, you know?
Yeah, nominee contestants do their own episode of Survivor Know-It-Alls right after the move that they make. But yeah, he called it the biggest F-up in Survivor history. I think, you know, that's still remains to be debated. I know that a couple people online were talking to us about, you know, maybe some of the bigger blunders that people made, especially in the pre-merge. But yeah, his recovery, I'd say over the course of this episode, was super interesting, because, you know, I'm wondering if he both, I mean, you would think that he benefited initially from the fact that, oh yeah, two Kubis Rhodes didn't come up. So now he could say, oh, no, I voted for Ting Ting as well. I just sort of panicked and played the idol for myself. But it seemed like it didn't really matter. It seemed like he was just so painted in a corner. And that might have partially just been due to the narrative he was trying to describe of like, oh, I panicked. What I'm intrigued about, I guess, first to hear from you, Shannon, is last week you said, OK, this is a great opportunity to just throw Kubis under the cool bus, as it were, by saying, hey, he lied about going to iOS. You know, he had this clue. But Jacques chooses to lie and say that he found the clue individually on the platform during the first challenge. Why do you think he did that?
Yeah, I mean, I still stand by the fact that that could have worked last week. But I was sensing in the scene that Kubis, Dante, and Felix were very, very tight. I still think there could have been cracks on that. I still think Dante could have been pissed about the flint, you know, before. But now, I think being such an outsider, maybe he felt like Kubis is in so tight with them and he's now not in tight with them at all. And maybe he felt like he didn't have that vantage point anymore where he could throw someone under the bus. Like, if you're under the bus, how are you throwing someone under the bus? You could probably drag them, you know, under it with you, but he probably didn't feel like he was in a position to do that. At that point, maybe Dante and Felix are like, okay, well, I don't care what Kubis did. We're like mad at you. He was such a target. So I did get the sense that it would have been really difficult. Those guys in particular seemed really aggressive about not trusting him. They were so mad at him without even knowing the Kubis votes, which is crazy. Like, he didn't even play it on Ting Ting. Like, he was saying he was super paranoid, which was an out that he could have had. You would think that they would just be like, wow, you really screwed up. You were super paranoid. Like, he didn't do anything that was so shady, considering he played it for himself, other than just having an idol, which they seem to think was like extremely snake-like to begin with.
Yeah, because Dante, who, granted, he could have done all this, you know, convincing and convoluted play. It doesn't seem like Dante would necessarily get it, considering he basically said, draw a picture in the sand, because I'm not understanding what's going on here. But I think the point that Dante took, at least, was like, I guess they were all looking for the idol together. In the early days of Ta'alo, maybe they were inspired by what Tanya was doing, being all squirrely and decided to do it. So I guess he felt it was like a breach of trust that, you know, he would have shared it. I think Dante would have fit in really well on Sa'ula. Mm. You know, I feel like if he would switch, like, I don't know, him and Leanne on Sa'ula and Ta'alo, how those tribes would have gelled. Because I think he's about to find out from a group of people who had a tribe idol. I think that's what Dante wanted all along. And the fact that Jacques was so individual with the idol and didn't tell everybody was probably the most offensive thing to him.
Yeah. Well, that's stupid because tribe idols are a rarity, you know. So, and also the lie that he had was the platform thing, obviously speaking from an element of truth because that's where he found the advantage. But you could believe that there was an idol on the platform or some type of advantage on the platform and still one hidden at camp to look for. I mean, he did lie about having an idol, but that's such a small breach of trust, I feel. Like, without knowing that Kuba's votes, without him playing it on Ting Ting and showing that they were a real pair after he just said that they spooned and nothing else last week, like, I think that this should have been not as bad. I mean, if they think that's so shady, what are they going to think later on when actual massive blindsides are happening? Like, from what we've seen of the old Ta'alo, which, by the way, Ta'oldlo, that's what we're calling it now, I feel like maybe this isn't a hyper-strategic tribe broadly. It's maybe people who haven't seen a lot of the show, because in the one tribal council we've seen of a lot of them, they told Ting Ting she was going, they weren't blindsiding her. Now they're pissed off that someone just has an idol that he erroneously plays on himself, which is such like a minor play. We know all of the bells and whistles behind it. We know there were other plans. We know he found it with Corbus. For Dante and Felix to be so angry about that, like, it's such a minor betrayal in their eyes, or it should be.
Well, I think it also goes back to the fact of how this tribe came together, which was it really was ostracizing Tanya and the six, with maybe Ting Ting a bit on the outside as number six, but the rest of them coming together just over this shared, you know, story of, wow, look at this lady. Isn't she kooky? And I wonder if that sort of has fostered an interesting, you know, bonds of loose friendship survivor wise in these people, so that when someone does hide information from them, it does feel like a betrayal. And it's crazy to say, like you said, this is a game like Survivor where these types of things are, you're going to do them essentially every other day, at least on your way to a million rand. But maybe it's just the community that was fostered with the Ta'alo tribe in particular, where I do think there might have been, you know, some cutthroat people on the tribe. But I feel like the vibe of them overall was like, hey, we're one big group that really likes each other. Why did you harsh our groove, man, by doing this? We had a plan. You didn't stick to it. And now you have egg all over your face.
Yeah, well, if I'm looking at, like, those three guys in particular, like, Corbus is a snake, and I think he would own that really proudly. Like, he's sneaky, that's cool. But for maybe Dante and Felix, they might just really not be big fans. And sometimes when there's a gap in that fandom level, like, I think of my friend and yours, Nick Iadanza, in, you know, Australian Survivor, he was such a big fan, and some other people had never seen the show. So they saw him as so duplicitous and so sneaky for doing things that people wouldn't that annihilate about if they knew the show or they understood like how modern the game has become in the US and kind of like more broadly internationally. So I think especially in international versions, that gap in fandom can be really, really big, because in the US Survivor, once you're applying, obviously, and once you are kind of in the casting process or even once you've been cast, you're going to watch the most recent seasons. You're kind of going to get a sense of where the game is. But in these international versions, they may never watch the modern show, the modern US show, before they go on. And other people, as we've seen, the Jacques of it all, the Knicks of it all, have seen every single season, and they're at season 38 and other people are at season one. So I don't think it's as big a disparity as it was in Australian Survivor, which was just jarring, but I do think that can come into play.
So the next day, I'm also very intrigued because Dante has really just now declared this blanketed statement of like, no matter what happens, we're doing it for the tribe. And I wonder if that means that they thought, maybe this is after they'd read that weird tree mail that Saula was reading and they felt a swap was on the way. But I'm a bit confused by what Dante's saying, Shannon. Maybe you can draw a picture in the sand for me. Was he insisting on no Rambos and no MacGyvers? What does that mean?
I don't feel like I can translate this. I don't know. Like, maybe we should try. We were already struggling to get the like South African terminologies. Maybe we should try and work out the Dante terminologies too and get a translator in for that.
Well, because I can understand Rambo, right? He's like someone who goes renegade and like blazes a war path, you know, in front of all his own enemies without blinking an eye. But MacGyver is not really known as a maverick to me. I guess he was more of an unconventional thinker, but it seemed like he was, I don't know, working for the good of society. Maybe I'm misinterpreting MacGyver wrong, but I think he was trying to paint MacGyver like, I don't know, like he was some sort of white collar criminal or something.
All I know of MacGyver is that Selma and Patty are obsessed with it on The Simpsons, so I can offer no other insights unless he thinks Selma and Patty will be obsessed with Jacques and is worried about that.
You know what? I think maybe he wouldn't then be a fan of Darrow, because Darrow was sort of a MacGyver in building that fake idol later on.
Yeah. Darrow. We finally got some Darrow stuff, which we'll finally get to talk about. And I also had my own social media downs with Darrow, so we're going to talk about that as well. But let's get to the swap itself, because, yeah, we have these new tribes. And by the way, so last season, if you guys weren't listening, we came up with new tribe names for the swap. We had Mindanao, which became, the old one was Mindathen, Mindanao, and then the third iteration was Mindanao-now. And then we had Luzon, Nuzon, and New Nuzon. So this is one I am suggesting. So Laomai is now Naomai. Mm-hmm. Just the one Naomai. And then if they swap again, we can be Naomai. Then Sunula. And this will just be Ta'alo now, and we'll always refer to the old one as Ta'oldlo. So this is, I feel like, the new terminology that we should have, unless you have better puns, Mike, because I spent a long time on this.
No, I enjoyed them all, though. Sanua just sounds like you're spelling sauna wrong, which sounds like a new, like, this is not your old fashioned, this is not your grandpa's sauna, this is a Sanua. This is where we have, I don't know, coals on iPads, and we have, you know, instead of steam, it's vape. Smoke. This is how we do the new sauna.
Well, I guess, you know, sounding like we're mispronouncing things is par for the course on this podcast, so even better. But So Naomai, which we're going to talk a lot about, is Rose, Darrow, Felix, Jacques, and Sipe. Sanula is Kubis, Steffi, Nathan, Mike, Maba, and Jeff. And Ta'alo is Rob, Nicole, Letitia, Rocco, Meryl, and Dante. And then Tanya comes in with her big stick and has a choice. And she chooses Naomai. So what did you think about her choice here, which had, of course, huge ramifications for the whole season?
I think it was a great choice. Mm-hmm. I really think it was, because, I mean, you have to put yourself in Tanya's head, which is a little, you know, scary. But, you know, she's coming in, and I think she sees that one of her best friends on Ta'alo is now gone. She also left with the knowledge that, hey, these people might not like me. And so she's like, okay, maybe these Ta'alo people aren't big fans of me. Who's the other person who I got a really good impression of besides Ting Ting? Hey, you know what? Sipe did something really encouraging to me. She was the Steffi to my mic as I threw a beanbag metaphorically in going to the Island of Secrets. Hey, she's on that tribe. Let me join it. In addition, you know, I thought for a second that she might have gone over to Ta'alo, because I'm sure we'll talk about the tribe breakdown. They do look very physically strong. And I know last time when she was on iOS, she was saying like, oh, I get to be part of, maybe I'll be part of Saula, concerning just how, you know, buff they are. And I feel like I belong with them. Look at all the chin-ups I can do. My upper body strength is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder if she would have made an enemy for herself, because if she did choose Saula or Ta'alo, she would be bumping another person onto Laomai, therefore making an enemy right off the bat. So I feel like it was just a perfect storm of conditions that had her making the right decision, and it ended up being a really good decision, because she was able to, you know, get across her Ta'alo strong mentality, make a close bond in Sipe, end up in a much, much better position than she was at any point of last episode.
Yeah, I think we predicted last week that she would be going to wherever Sipe was, which I honestly think was the driving factor in her choice. I love this decision. I feel like she had no connections on Ta'alo. She correctly read that there was going to be a connection with Sipe, and I love Tipe. I love this new thing that they've got going on. And honestly, just having someone that you can trust and connect with and feel comfortable with, when you've had people that you don't feel comfortable with, is such an extreme value. Like, I don't think you can put a price on that, because it's the kind of thing where it changes your whole demeanor in the game. Like, she has new life in this game, and I honestly think it's based on that connection with Sipe. And I think great on her behalf that she didn't have to bump someone unnecessarily right here at the beginning of the game, pissing someone off. Like, if Sipe had been on another tribe, it might have been a necessary evil. But I think here it's perfect that she can slot into that tribe. It's so good for her. Yeah, Sanula was never going to be an option, because they just had one Ta'alo person. Even so, I don't even know she would necessarily be looking to even have a Ta'alo majority, because she was such a, you know, unwelcome part of Ta'alo, Ta'oldlo. But she, it's hard to get it, but we are going to get it.
I think we're going to have a few episodes to get it down. So
no, but so the new Ta'alo, I feel, would have been pretty, you know, desirable, because they are a really strong tribe. And if she sent someone like Letitia to another tribe, they might never lose. And then also she has a majority with Ta'oldlo there. But I still think they could lose a challenge at any time. Who knows who throws one beanbag, you know, or they could even throw a challenge to get rid of her. Like, if she doesn't have a home there, it just takes one challenge loss and she might not have any social foothold there. Whereas with this new tribe, again, she gets that Ta'old low majority, so she might be relevant to them, like on, like she would have had on the other tribe. But the main core factor is that she has Sipe, she has someone looking out for her. Now the way it's gone down, I feel like that's definitely the tightest pairing of Naomei. So she has a lot of options now. I feel like this was perfect. Like, it wasn't the aggressive move. Of course, sending someone to a weaker tribe and trying to go into the very strong tribe and getting a majority like that, that's an aggressive move. But it was the right move. It was just, like, perfectly placed, perfect read of the social situations. And I think the fact that she does so well in this episode and is in such a good spot is down to that really good read.
I also do wonder if there's a bit of ego involved as well. Well, maybe this tribe sort of needs my skills in the challenges. It's sort of like, you know, would I rather be at the top of, you know, the average class, or would I rather be in the middle of the honors class? And sometimes you do want to be challenged, but, you know, I think Tanya, especially feeling that she was at the bottom of the tribe, maybe she feels like I'll become invaluable if I go on to Naomei. And so she takes that spot. There is one thing about the swap that I found interesting, and maybe it's because this is more of the O and not the A that we see in America. Usually in the American version, Jeff just says, okay, everybody open it once. They sort themselves out, and then Jeff sort of recites who's on each tribe. This one went down the line, complete with our old returning friend from Survivor South Africa, Philippines. Give it up for gratuitous slow motion. It is back, and it is back in style. But it's so interesting how they went down the line. And so they had the contestants narrate who was going to each tribe rather than having Nico recap it altogether. Was this just sort of like a minute change to you, or did you like the stylistic choice?
I don't know. When they don't have the full opening credits and you're like, ooh, this must be a really big episode. Like, why is this episode so extreme that they couldn't afford to have like a minute or two of opening credits? It's like, then I discovered the reason they couldn't do it was because of all the slow-mo, which was why they had to cut that out. Like, I don't know. For me, they have 55 minutes. I would be annoyed with it in US Survivor where they're cramming everything in. This feels a little more luxurious. They have time. What were they going to give that extra time to? Were we going to get more steers? Because I could not have possibly taken more steers. So if they're going to use their time on this, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing. I think the slow motion is much more, again, gratuitous during the challenge, which wouldn't make sense if it wasn't tossing beanbags, if it wasn't like, you know, akin to if your friend records you playing cornhole on their GoPro and then edits it, you know, to post on YouTube in epic slow-mo fashion. But it's an interesting choice that I feel like we haven't really seen in the first three episodes. And these tribes, I'm so glad they shook out the way they did for so many reasons. And maybe just because we've only had one other 3-3 tribe swap in Survivor history, which was Triple H in the American version. But I mean, what I really like about it is we get, you know, some faction of each tribe on each tribe. And sometimes that's not the case. We even saw it as recently as Edge of Extinction, where one tribe was made up of all people from one of the tribes that got dissolved. But there's such interesting number situations and dynamics going on that even though, again, we didn't see too much of one tribe in particular, and we saw a bit of another tribe, but not as much as Naomei. There's going to be a lot, again, setting up the pieces. There's going to be a lot to knock over once they go to tribal council.
Yeah, I mean, every tribe only has a plurality on each new tribe, which was funny to me because I'm like, oh, great, no majority. And then once CP gets sent to Island of Secrets, like, this is the one majority they could have had, where it's three Ta'old Lows versus, like, the Laomeis. But yeah, I think it could be really fun. It's going to start getting, I think, a little bit claustrophobic in these really small tribes if we have to keep going with it for a really long time. I'm happy to shift it in a couple of episodes to two tribes. But at the moment, I think the dynamics are really interesting. So let's start talking more about Naomei, who ended up going to tribal. And as we've said, this combustible three, which is just hilarious to me that it was these three people who have had no end of issues. Well, Jacques is the first one. He runs to the well. I'm like glad that we predicted this. I don't know if he like incepted the idea into his mind. No, that was all him. He ran to the well, found the idol. I think this was a really good tribe for him because there was only one Saula on the tribe, which was Sipe. And I feel like she was the one person we didn't even see at the well when they found it. So I don't even know if she knew it was there. So he had just like an open field to find the idol, which was a pretty good recovery after what he'd gone through.
Yeah, and also he happened to be on the one beach that didn't have the idol dug up. as well.
Yeah.
And for some reason, maybe it's because as Dural, from what we saw, maybe they're not great at, you know, being able to break down reading analytics when it comes to clue descriptions. But it's so crazy how they hadn't found it yet. Letitia was sort of poking around it, not with a sharp stick in those first few days. But Jacques got very lucky in a number of ways in that he swapped away from his tribe where he was in a really bad situation. He swapped onto a beach where nobody, save for maybe Sipe, as you pointed out, knew where the idol was. And he was able to sneak away immediately and grab it before Rose and Dural realize the situation they're in and start looking for the idol. That being said, you could almost say that the luck undoes itself a bit in the way that he handles said idol find and what he does with said idol. But I would say at this moment, he has had so much fall into his lap that he has acted upon perfectly to get himself at least back in a safe position, another idol in a pocket. The armory is stocked back up here.
Yeah, I mean, everything he has found, which to this point in four episodes, two idols and an advantage, I think has been through like really good elevated thinking, like his complete super fandom coming out where he knows to look for the one item that looks, you know, a little bit different when he's the caller in the first challenge and he uses Kubus's clue against him and now he kind of uses that information. Like that's super fan knowledge and that's great. But as you said, it does kind of come undone with, I think, what's been the issue in his game so far, which might be like the social dynamics and the read that he had, because he tells Felix that he has the idol. And I feel like this is like the wrong read on Felix, because firstly, Felix thinks you're shady just for having and playing an idol. Like he seems really, really sneaky. And now to be like, well, I'm so sneaky that the next day I already have the new one. I think he's painting a massive target on his back. I also think Felix handled it really badly. I think it was a huge misplay on both of their behalves. But I do think for him, like, he should have had the read to know that Felix was a lost cause and he'll get rid of him at some point, rather than trying to mend that fence with someone who is so irritated with him for the reasons he's now bringing to him again. Like, he's honestly just like pouring more idols in the wound.
Yeah, I want to break down each side of this talk, because I legitimately thought for a good second, because this is Survivor South Africa and anything can happen, I did think for a second, especially when after that scene we get Jacques claiming that Felix, you know, is bossing him around at camp, I could have seen a situation where Jacques flips over to Rose and Dural and votes off Felix, which would have been absolutely insane. But this is Jacques. He has been the, you know, no matter what you think of him, I think he has been the central focus of the season so far, pretty much outside of the overall entity that is the former Saoula people. And there's just been so much happening to him and he's been causing it as well. And I think that, you know, I could understand why he would want to do this. I think, like you said, if he gets the sense that Felix, along with Dante and Kubus, are these people who want you to be upfront with them to say, we're going to use this together, this is the tribe's idol, he's trying to do that, but it's a bit of a day late and a dollar short. And I think that if we're just talking about it from the Jacques side, because I totally agree that I think two wrongs did not make a right here. And I thought what Felix was demanding of him was not great as well. But the way that Jacques handled his pitch by basically saying, like, there's a 0% chance that that's happening, I feel like you never want to say 0% chance in Survivor ever. It's like a taboo phrase that you never want to say in general.
Yeah, ideally, don't be openly yelling at people in Survivor. Like, don't get to a point where your relationships are so bad, but the people you need to work with and live with, you are arguing with them very openly, which is what they were both doing. For Jacques' perspective, I get the intention. I get what he's trying to do. But the conclusion he ends up coming to and the read that he ends up getting, which is correct, is this is a lost cause. I should make plans to get rid of Felix, like, at some point soon. But the problem is he comes to that conclusion after he has showed him all his cards. So now Felix has that leverage over him. I do think that Jacques in general has more leverage over Felix because he has, as we now know, the idol. And I think he has a better chance of working with Tanya than surely Felix, who has had no end of troubles with her. So, and I think Tanya's at the center of that tribe. But I do think from both of their perspectives, neither of them has enough leverage. Like, Sipe and Tanya seem to have all of the cards. They may not know that, but they have all of the power in this tribe. Both of Felix and Jacques should be worrying about their survival in the tribe rather than arguing with each other and putting off like an ally that they're supposed to have.
And how crazy is that? That two of the women who are about to be first voted out of their tribes in the very first episode are now in power in the course of this tribe. That's just the difference a swap makes And Felix, I can understand, like you said, the incredulity that he came in with, just because Jacques was doing something that essentially he had not done the day beforehand. And it's like the scorpion and the frog. Why wouldn't you sting me again? I thought Felix's demands were a bit rash.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you trust me so much, give me the idol and I'll take it to tribal council. And, you know, maybe if he or Jacques had offered maybe a middle ground of like, I'll leave the idol back at camp before going to tribal council and you can watch me do it so that nobody can play the idol. We're going to sit on the grenade, both of us, so that I'm not going to use it and you're not going to use it. That might have been the best way to at least work through this round, but it really did seem like I can imagine maybe Felix was seeing a bit of the idol in his eyes as well. And maybe he was feeling a bit of that Saula in him and said, all right, I want to hold on to this idol and blindside the person who is holding on to it so that I can technically have possession of the idol since I'm the only person that knows about it. But yeah, I think that I think Jacques was trying to come at him with a handshake, and then Felix came in, was trying to come in with a fist bump.
Yeah.
And they just sort of like were mangling their hands together and couldn't settle on a gesture.
I have that vision in my mind now. It's hard for me to analyze how this conversation should have gone because I feel like it never should have happened. But yeah, there's a lot Felix can do with this information that's not just yelling at Jacques and making unreasonable demands on him to give him the idol. That's insane. But he also says that he doesn't trust him as far as he can throw him. And I said this on Twitter, but I don't want them to test it out. Maybe if they keep arguing, we're going to end up seeing it. But I feel like Felix could throw Jacques very, very far. Like, I think that is not the right analogy, because definitely he could just be throwing him like a javelin, I think.
Well, I think, you know, if Tanya really wants feats of strength to test how strong these tribe members are, because that's her criteria for voting, maybe they should do a bit of shot put, Jacques put, as it were, where they just pick up Jacques and throw them as far as he can. I also said that I think, you know, Jacques probably has a good amount of crud in his hair at this point, and maybe he's a bit weighed down. Maybe Felix, they did say he was a former rugby player. Maybe he's a bit stronger in his lower half than his upper half, or maybe he threw out his shoulder tackling those Saula guys a couple challenges back. There's a couple of reasons why Felix might be sitting out the Jacques throwing at the moment, but he's ready to throw Jacques under the bus no matter what.
The cool bus, yeah. I feel like him throwing Jacques across the beach, I just imagine just like the beach is then like strewn with idols and advantages that have fallen out of Jacques' pocket. That's how you find him. You're just like shaking him out by throwing him across the beach. This is very violent. I just thought, like, Felix said he couldn't throw Jacques very far. I'm like, you're underestimating yourself. You definitely can. Don't try it, but you can. But to speak,
Jacques' pockets, also known as his jockets.
That one was actually really good.
Thank you. Listen, I'm good. I'm like one for every like 10. I think that's a good hit miss ratio.
No, you know that I'm joking. Like, you know, I love all the puns. But to talk about Tanya, as you said, that maybe it was the swap that put her and Sipe, these old first boots, into good positions. I have to give more credit to Tanya and Sipe for working with what they have so well. Tanya was the one who I felt was rebirthed through the swap, but she was having that conversation with Felix where she was more the mediator and Jacques and Felix are the main people arguing. I was like, what am I watching here? Like, she was so normal. She was completely like the glue, I think, of those to old low three who ended up voting together. We got some questions, you know, do you think that the same vote would have happened if Jacques had gone to the Island of Extinction or different people had gone instead of Sipe? I think that it was going to be Rose or Durrell, unless Tanya went. Like, Tanya was the glue, because then maybe Sipe's not voting with those two guys, and maybe those two guys are being held together by someone like Tanya was kind of holding the whole ship together. So, crazy to me. And I know I said she wouldn't get Chili points. I still contend that she shouldn't have got Chili points last week because she just got an advantage. But this episode, for me, Tanya was the player of the episode, not just because she chose the right thing in the swap, which I think she absolutely did, and it played such dividends, and like all the credit to her, but also to come in there, to have read the CP connection well, just through basically glances, to affirm that connection, and then to just be so normal, and also just holding this really crazy ship together, like just an amazing play from Tanya, and I am totally saying that, and Tom won Survivor. So I've been wrong before, and I was wrong about Tanya here because this was really, really good.
I do wonder, and hopefully we have the opportunity to talk with her after the season about this. We have heard so much about how Ghost Island and Edge of Extinction has really been a come to Survivor Jesus moment for some people, where you go out there and you say, okay, I realize what I've done wrong in the game so far. This is what I need to do to have a path to win the game. Tanya went to the Island of Secrets knowing that people did not like her, that she grinded the wrong way when it came to personality. She was a bit abrasive, maybe too joking, etc. maybe out there she realized, okay, let me take on a different role here. And she very much did when she came back. And maybe it was the circumstances, but it is pretty bananas that you have someone like Felix who said, I want to be the one person to take Tanya out 2 episodes ago while they were shivering in the rain, now confiding in Tanya about, oh yeah, Jacques's crazy, isn't he? It's fantastic just how Survivor makes strange bedfellows. Literally, we saw that last season with Tom and Palessa. I do wonder if Tanya was picked to side between Jacques and Felix, who she would pick. Because we saw Jacques' plan, right? Jacques' plan, which I feel like whenever a plan is vocalized on Survivor so far in advance, you know it's not happening. Like we saw that last episode when Jacques was saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to play my idol on Ting Ting. Kubis is going to go and I'm going to wear his clothes. Obviously didn't happen. Jacques' plan here was what? To get rid of Rose, then to swing Dorao over to vote out Sipay and then Felix. So I think that that's probably not going to happen in the near future. But I feel like if Tanya was given a choice to side with whatever old low member she had to, it's weird to say, I feel like she'd go with Felix. Because it feels like as someone who is, it's weird coming from Miss, I have so many foursomes, I can't even count them. But she seemed very put off when Felix told her about what Jacques did at that tribal council. Maybe she's drinking that Tahalo Kool-Aid. But I think she was a little taken aback by what Jacques had done, and it made her a little less trusting in him. She's talking with Sipay about somebody being too paranoid next episode. I'm going to assume it's Jacques, because I think Jacques maybe has that sort of temperament. It is the super fan in him. So I wonder if maybe there is some slowly building resentment where these two former enemies and Felix and Tanya are going to come closer together.
For me, I think that she'd be more likely to go with Jacques. I mean, not in Jacques' plan to take out Sipay. That's not happening. He'd have to let go of that. I mean, these people don't seem to realize that Tipay is a thing, probably because it's mostly happened in glances, and like, how would they know that that connection has happened? But yeah, if he changes the plan, I feel like she's going to go with Jacques, because while she might have been put off about the idol play, she doesn't know all that we know that Jacques could tell her, that, you know, it was a whole Ting Ting thing and they had a plan together. So everyone didn't seem to know that Jacques and Ting Ting were so close. That's a secret like he's kind of taken now, and then Ting Ting's gone and he doesn't have to tell them. But for Tanya, it could help, because she seems to think that like she and Ting Ting were best friends, even though Ting Ting wasn't really into it. But she'll never know that until she watches it back. So now she knows it. But at the time, she was like, they took out Ting Ting because she was close to me, and she has ownership over that. So maybe I feel like that memorial Ting Ting connection could unite her and Jacques, as long as Jacques isn't going after her main ally in Sipay, which she could probably kind of just change around.
I'm here for the Ghost of Ting Ting Alliance.
The Ghost of Ting Ting Alliance. I do love that. Yeah, it's the people that Ting Ting was close to, at least in Tanya's mind. She's like, I was Ting Ting's best friend. Jacques was her second best friend. So this is what Ting Ting would have wanted.
Yeah, I do love that. Ting Ting's presence looms large. I was a little surprised, actually, not to go back too far, but the reaction from the other tribe members when they found out Ting Ting was gone was interesting. Jeff had goosebumps. They're almost reacting as if they had like gotten rid of Dante or something. I didn't realize that they thought Ting Ting was such a big asset to the tribe.
Yeah, well, maybe they were just weirded out that Tanya wasn't there, and that she, like, but not by going home, but that the tribe walks in without Ting Ting and Tanya, and they're like, but it's just Ting Ting that went home. So maybe that. Also, people, you know, there's staff of content out there. Everything's surprising.
That's true. But they just have a big reaction if, like, I'm sure when Tanya came in walking with a stick, they gave, like, a standing ovation to her.
I did. It was amazing. But to talk about the vote itself, this incredibly captivating vote between Rose and Dorao, like such a huge character.
I felt we were held captive for about 10 minutes of that tribal council. So yes, that does make sense.
Oh, I actually really enjoyed the tribal council, because Jacques, as we know, is a podcaster. And for me, it was like a podcast. Like, it should have been a really boring tribal council, I thought, because the vote was so predictable. But I really loved this debate that they were having about the decision to send Sipay to the Island of Secrets. It was so analytical. I literally felt like he was you, Mike. Like, and I guess I was becoming the Rose Lee, because he was, you know, Dorao obviously starts it off by saying we can bring the Lao Mei connections at the merge, which I don't think anyway is a great, like, because we have all our members, but it's like, well, we still have a lot of members. Like, we could easily boodle you down. This isn't the type of thing where there's just a couple of us and we're going to need that many allies. Like, we could just whittle you down and have our own allies. But
and also, like, you can't really make a deal. I could understand that Dorao was again sort of backed into a corner, but for him to say, like, okay, if you just hold off voting me off for like five or six tribal councils. I swear. Then me and my gang, we're going to take you under our wing and we'll go to the end.
Yeah, the one remaining member of this tribe once you've had to cannibalize everyone else to get to that point. But I love this back and forth. Like, it was so analytical. Jacques is saying that, you know, he identifies that Rocco and Letitia didn't fight for them to go to the Island of Secrets. But then Rose very smartly counters this and is saying that splitting them up would have been worse because now they just needed one swing vote. And he's like, ah, yes, but if they had sent me or Felix, then that swing vote could have been Sipe or maybe Tanya, who they know is kind of like on the outs from being to the Island of Secrets. And then Rose is like, well, maybe they tried to do that and they just lost out. And like every point was so good that I was like, yes, but like that does make sense. Oh, but yeah, no, that's a better point. Like it was actually a really good debate at Tribal Council. Just like the super fan nerd in me enjoyed watching such a deep exploration of the thought process of the other tribes from this tribe in that moment, even if they all knew and we all knew that this vote was really boring.
And I wonder if maybe that's sort of a fringe benefit of Island of Secrets as well, because as we'll talk about, not every episode will garner some sort of literal advantage, but the decisions that the other tribes make, especially now that they're mixed up, is going to be extremely interesting. Hopefully we don't go the Ghost Island route where they can't make a decision and so everyone just ends up drawing rocks down the line. But I agree. I think they were very cogent points made across the both of them. And I know that, you know, Jacques might be a bit confrontational sometimes. I might come across a bit like a, for lack of a better term, know-it-all with some of the points that he was making. But I feel like him and Rose were batting it back and forth pretty playfully. It was the one point that I wasn't a huge fan of was when Tanya said something like, oh, you know, when Jacques sort of made this point that, you know, Lao Mei wasn't united, and Jacques spoke up and like interrupted her to correct her. And I'm sure Tanya sort of took it, you know, like water off a duck's back. But it's not great if you want to feel like you need to correct your allies in the moment. But outside of that, I thought he made some very salient points, as did Rose, about exactly why Ta'alo chose to send Sipe to iOS.
Yeah, the choices of iOS are becoming the most interesting thing I think about it. And the rocks thing just ruined that dynamic on Ghost Island. So I just hope so much that that's not going to happen. Because as we've seen, the fact that they chose Tanya and the fact that Sipe was really vocal about wanting to help her, that could make the strongest alliance in the game. The fact that Rob has done this, we'll definitely talk about it. But the fact that he sent Sipe, there's so many ramifications there, good and bad. And just look at the way that the tribes are thinking about it. So as long as they're not choosing rocks to see who goes, I absolutely love this dynamic. It's probably my favorite part of Island of Secrets so far.
What if they choose Rocco? Is that close enough to rocks?
Yeah. We're going to go to rocks, and to that we mean the person whose name is closest to rocks. Sorry, Rocco. Unfortunate for you. Rose and Doral, though, as we've said, I really don't think a good job here, not combusting what seems like the most combustible three on the island. And the fake idol plan was so weird to me. It's like, it seemed like they weren't really even trying. You know, Rose seemed like she was almost resigned to her fate here. And that's a tough thing to say about someone. But firstly, during the swap, she said comfort was her main priority. Weird to me. That's just a weird thing to vocalize. I'm like, they're going to put that in if you get voted out this episode. And also, that she was like, I'm happy to make the fake idol for Doral to use even like when I'm gone. I'm like, what? Like, throw Doral under the cool bus. Like, you weren't even aligned in the previous episode. So I just feel like, I don't know what they were doing. The lie of the idol was bad. The interpretation of the clue in the first place by Rocco and then all the boys was not good. And also, beyond that, the fact that he had to tell it to Jacques of all people, who happened to have, he's like, I have every idol in the game, Doral. Every single one. So I genuinely don't need you to do this to me.
Doral, this poor, poor puppy of a man. I felt for him so much for this episode because this was really a coming out party for him, but not in a great way. I felt like, you know, in the previous few episodes, we didn't see a lot of strategizing from him because I don't felt he necessarily needed to. He was pretty well insulated by Rocco and what he thought were these group of guys that were super tied. He didn't realize that Jeff and Mike were seeing other people. But now that it's him and Rose and he has to be one half of this dynamic duo to break apart this, what they feel like is formidable alliance, it didn't work out too well for him. He still has life in the game, but he's sort of on life support at this point, considering that, yeah, the interpretation of the clue about the shadow of the tree, like, there may have been an idol clue in Survivor Pass that has done that, but like, this is not Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't know if we're getting that technical with like where the sun is supposed to be. I'm so confused about the fact that they made this fake idol, which I think by fake idol standards looked okay. I mean, they even used a pendant from Darrow's necklace. It obviously is not the key that is the real idol. But, like, why didn't he show it to anybody? Why did they make it and then not actually put it on display? Unless he wanted his necklace to be intact back. It's just very odd that Darrow says, you know what, I'm going to win them over with words. Like, I have an idol. You don't need to see it, but I definitely do.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he just wanted the pendant back on his necklace. It's like, if I'm getting voted out, I at least want to look good. Maybe it'll come out in the future, because as we said, Rosalie was like, maybe it'll work even when I'm gone. But this was so weird. Like, at the point they were just hugging, like, yep, it's one of us. Like, there was more you could have done, surely.
And I totally thought they were going to pass something off to, like, I don't know, put something in Darrow's pocket. Darrow put something in Rose's pocket to make it look like, wait a minute, what did they do? You know, really stoke the paranoia of those three. But no, it was genuinely sweet. I wonder if it was a combination of A, again, these two people had not been to tribal council before, and B, these two seemed like they were not necessarily, again, like the most strategically on the ball on their tribe, you know. They were both part of, you know, respective alliances, but even in the last episode, Rose is vocalizing like, I know I'm on the bottom, which her edit, even over the course of those two episodes, has been very interesting. You mentioned I wanted to leave Lao Mei because I wanted, you know, I wanted comfort instead of the crappy shelter that we have. And then her coming up with all these plans but not acting on them. It was just a very odd way to see her play the game. Like, why did we see the confessional last week of her saying, I'm on the bottom, so I'm going to flip on my alliance? Was it just to foreshadow the fact that the rest of her alliance would swap away from her and literally flip away from her?
Yeah, and that was weird, because it definitely felt like her demise was going to be at the hand of, like, maybe not trusting her alliance, or they actually flip against her. But instead it was just this. I feel like the complex plan that is making the fake idol and then not using it is not right. It's pretty simple. Just throw Darrow under the bus. And I think that Darrow has some life in the game, because not because of anything he did, but because of what Jacques and Felix are doing in that super combustible. I say combustible a million times in this podcast, but it is. It's just like waiting to explode. He definitely has, you know, the chance there to get in with that. Jacques has already talked about wanting to use him basically for his own personal gains. And I just think that, yeah, you just have to survive this one vote and then hope for a crack. And the fact that they weren't going to the other side and giving points, because I think that there's pros and cons in this really captivating, but, you know, decision between Darrow and Rose. Who's it going to be? The other one's going to go on to win the game. But there were reasons, you know. Darrow obviously screwed up the challenge, but might be more of an asset in other challenges. Rose, as we know, is a bigger strategic threat, or at least, you know, was more socially connected on the other tribe, whether you see that as a good thing or a bad thing. I think probably best that they got rid of her. She was, Darrell's not winning. Darrell, I can't, you know, he's not doing anything. Rose, I don't know.
Anything can happen in Survivor South Africa.
Not this, Mike. Like, this is the one.
I don't know.
I will eat, Verna's clue if Darrell is
the winner. That thing's been through the ringer, so good luck. maybe the worst shot Darrell has is that the final three challenges. Okay, here's a set of planks. Walk on them across this field. The first person across wins, because, my God, I mean, that was something that, to your point, I know that Tanya said, well, in true Tanya fashion, one challenge performance doesn't matter, so we're not going to get rid of Darrow. That being said, Rose sucks in this challenge, so clearly we need to get rid of her. But Rose very clearly could have had a setup here, and it might not have been an easy sell considering how athletic Darrow is, but she could have easily said, like, this guy cost us so much time in the first part of that challenge. Considering how good Jacques and Felix were on the same bag, we would have been eating ribs by the time, you know, the other two tribes had come in. She very easily could have done that, going off these first impressions that people made. But instead, she felt connected to him for some strange reason. And I really do feel like her lack of seizing the moment in a number of ways, including trying to target Darrow, ended up spelling her fate here. Now, could there have been a scenario where they say, oh, wow, she's really coming across as untrustworthy and that she would throw her own tribe member under the bus? Maybe, but you miss 100% of the shots you never take. And she didn't take many shots this episode.
Yeah, I mean, who knows with Felix, who thinks just playing an idol is super shady. Like, throwing Darrow under the bus shouldn't be shady. Like, that's just the obvious thing to do. It doesn't make you sneaky. It doesn't make you a bad person. Like, she wasn't even aligned with him or connected with him before. I can't believe that it was like, yep, it's us against the world. Like, no, it's you against Darrell. So you better start making some moves. Yeah, the Rose versus Darrell argument is super boring. And I do think they ended up making the right move, as we know, because Rose had allies. Darrell wasn't once mentioned on, you know, the old Lao Mei. So he might not have even existed there. He might have entered the game in this episode. TBD on that. I'm still investigating. Ooh,
here's my theory. The stick turned into Darrell.
It's true, we didn't see the stick after that, and we did see Darrell. It's just that he wasn't even mentioned at all. Like, this happens to me often when I used to watch The Bachelor. Like, sometimes 5 episodes in, there'd just be some random person, and you're like, did they just come in now? Like, there's no way. I've never seen this person before in my life. Like, I can guarantee you that.
Here's my theory, that on the Island of Secrets, Tanya was visited by the Survivor Blue Fairy, and saying, like, I'm going to enchant this piece of wood who will turn into a survivor contestant. So Darrell has essentially become the Pinocchio of Lao Mei, which would make sense why Tanya would want to keep him around, because she can literally be the puppet master.
Okay, so Darrell is a puppet who entered the game in this episode, and that is now canon. Yeah, but in terms of a more interesting decision, a lot of conversation about should Felix or Jacques have flipped to work with these two people who had every attempt to work together despite not actually trying to recruit someone over to their side. So if they had done it of their own volition without someone approaching them, do you think that that was a move for Jacques or Felix once it seems like they really can't work together?
See, it's so weird because I do wonder how much the decision of the last tribal council played into this one, where maybe just because of the adverse reaction to what Jacques did, the Ta'alo members are sort of playing away from the big moves itis of it all and certain wanting to make the more conservative moves. It is so interesting how they were all on the same mindset. Say what you want to about the personality scuffles, but they all believed, okay, no matter what, we need to stick together. They were really believing in Dante's mantra, his dantra, if you will, about
that was also really tribe. Mike, you are on point today. You are on point.
Oh, thank you. On point like the Darrell stick. But I think that it could have been an interesting move, you know, to scoop them up and use them down the line to, I guess, get rid of Tanya. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they don't know that Tanya has a relationship with CPay. Tanya, who, again, I think really benefited from this vote because she really has espoused this thing of, I haven't had an opportunity yet to prove how loyal I am to the tribe. And I think that she was able to prove that here by not flipping as well. Why get rid of someone who's telling you I'm with you no matter what? It seems like that would just be completely, you know, cockamamie. I understand how much you would want to be pissed at the other person to get rid of them. But the fact of the matter is, you have this majority. Don't squander the numbers, because, you know, if you do get rid of each other, who knows how much Rose and Darrell, because apparently they're working together so much, they're biffles, they might swing over CPay and even Tanya next episode, and then you're on the other side of the stick.
Maybe that should be our duo, Rose and Darrell. Maybe that should be our new avatar, the dynamic duo. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't even thinking of them taking out Tanya, which, by the way, it is amazing that by leaving Tanya in the game here, they are like leaving in the most dangerous person in the tribe at the moment, because that's who Tanya has become. Survivor South Africa is crazy. But I was thinking more like, after this fight, does Felix just go to the Lao Mei people and say, oh, let's just take out Jacques, or vice versa? But I don't think that would have been the right move. I think that Felix is so core to Old Lo that giving Lao Mei and the, you know, the old power structure at Lao Mei more of a foothold would be a bad thing. I think Jacques has room to move here. He has an idol. I personally think you disagree, but I do think that he has more of a chance to work with Tanya, so he has his own plans. I just think here, Lao Mei haven't lost a member yet. Makes a lot of sense to just kind of do that, and then, you know, now maybe start working on your plans against each other rather than doing it from the get-go. Because we often see when people turn against each other from the very beginning without at least taking out one member of another tribe, usually at a merge, here at a swap. But when they do that, often it just kind of all starts crumbling from the inside and you might be next to go.
It's a lot harder to say, okay, I know we betrayed each other 2 votes ago, but I think this time we should really work together to take out the common enemy. Because it's more so, what have you done for me lately? You also have to wonder what the vote off is going to project to the other tribe as well. Maybe the reason why we saw that Rose stuff last episode is because she does have her other 3 allies on another tribe. Could we see Mike, Jeff, and Maba sort of exact revenge, you know, on Saula, and that causes, you know, poor Mr. Kubis to end up, you know, spelling his demise just because of what his old tribe members did to one of theirs?
Yeah, well, I mean, let's talk about the dynamics on Sanula then, and then we can get to Ta'alo, because Yeah, they're just Kubus there, and then it's like a 3-2-1. Steffi wants to bring Kubus over for a 3-3, but it would make a lot of sense for him, at least if he can, to make it a 4-2, because, yeah, they can take him out, they can kind of choose which of the tribes they want to damage here, and as we've seen, I do think they will be reading into the dynamics on the other tribes to make those decisions.
Yeah, this is an interesting group, because I could see why Steffi would want to make a 3-3, but they even talked about this, on Laomei of, okay, you know, we could bring over Tanya, but Tanya wouldn't want to make it 3-3. She wants to be in the majority no matter what. And Kubus, even though the previews next week says completely the opposite, he loves being in this decision. He feels like he is the kingmaker, though I do wonder, you know, it would be tough for them to take out Nathan, Steffi, or Kubus, considering how strong they all are, and I feel like they might need their strongest people, especially going up against just a powerhouse tribe like Ta'alo. But as they talked about numerous times in this season, strength just doesn't mean physical stuff. So maybe they've disregarded that. I guess the other big piece of news from Sanula this moment is, for some reason, it is the flint repellent tribe, because they lost their flint again. This is Hunapu 2.0 from San Juan del Sur Shaded.
Oh my god. The Flint story on Sanula and Saula and every iteration of this tribe is so hilarious to me, because it's just like, it happened again. It happened again. We lost the Flint. Like, the most torrid love affair you will ever find. It was between Saula and the Flint. We barely ever see tribes lose the Flint before, and this tribe cannot keep track of it. Like, they need a tracking device on the Flint, because it's always somewhere else.
Never was there a story more cruel than this of the Flint and the tribe Saula. This is... Just leave it back at camp!
It's not hard! Every other tribe is doing it.
They're just like, well, I know, okay, so we know when someone took it last time and left the game. I feel like this time, if we give it to somebody, it definitely won't be leaving the tribe.
It's like the look on Nathan's face where he's like, no. Again, same problem. It got blindsided out of the game. It got taken to a different camp. Like, just leave it by the fire. Just do that. Just leave it in the
production
shop.
Production might run out of flints this season just because of what Saulo's been doing.
The Flint in general, this is like my favorite season of like Flint talk, because it's just been like such a major plot point. This is hilarious, even though of course Rob does give it back to Nathan eventually. This was so funny to me. And like, I have to say, Nathan this episode, underratedly bad. Like, not just losing the Flint, but also that he comes there and he's like, guys, we have an idol. And my name is Nathan. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Why? We have an idol, but don't worry, guys. It's not here. We don't have it. So don't worry.
Yeah. It's like, the thing is, you know, on Ta'alo, Rob's lie was so perfect. It was so good. How could this not have been something they communally discussed before, that was the perfect lie? Like, yeah, what happened on Island of Secrets episode 1? Paul came back with the clue. Like, it's all true. So it's really believable, except just say he went home with the idol in his pocket. So believable. And like, this is kind of come back to bite Rob, surely, because Nathan has now spilled the beans on the other tribe.
Yeah, maybe he should have gotten rid of him instead of Paul. Maybe they realized that keeping your ally might betray you. And not only that, but Nathan was also really perked up people's ears when they're celebrating with their rack of rib. Nathan's like, I don't think they're going to vote along tribe lines. That's something that nobody would do here, right? Just checking. Nobody would vote along tribe lines. Yeah, nobody? Great. Perfect. Thank you. By the way, we still don't have an idol.
Yeah, we also don't have an idol, and we are in the minority, but we don't need to talk about that. What is a minority? Tribe lines don't exist. The game is super fluid. Like,
don't worry. And we have a great camp, and we don't have a flint, but this is a beautiful set of bananas that you could all eat.
It's like two truths and a lie. It's like, tribe lines don't exist. We have the flint, and we don't have an idol. Like, oh my god, there was so much there. Like, not a great impression to come in, just be like, yeah, I'll fire. Oh, we lost the flint. Imagine having to be like, guys, this isn't even the first time this has happened. I know it's been a week, but we have lost the flint now twice. Like, amazing stuff. There wasn't a ton going on here. So I want to talk about Ta'alo, because it is connected in a way that Nathan and Rob are always connected across speeches, for sure. Yeah. They also had a lot of info flying around, some real, some fake. Dante was kind of like the Nathan on this tribe, just like telling them everything, which was annoying Meryl. Just, you know what? I feel like, you know, you guys do Amazing Race 101. I feel like some of these contestants are needing Survivor 101 on this podcast, where it's like, don't give all the information to your new tribe mates 5 minutes of meeting, you know, 5 minutes after you've met them. That's it.
Well, I wonder if Dante was just so, again, incredulous at the, you know, the audacity of what Jacques did that he's like, guys, you won't believe what happened. I gotta tell you this story. And Meryl's just like, shut up, Dante. But for what it's worth, I mean, that's sort of has what's gotten Dante so far, is that it does really feel like he is somebody who is authentic and will not betray you, and just seems completely put off by some of these, you know, more cutthroat elements of the game, that I think he's endeared himself to maybe some of these other people of like, well, we know that Dante won't do anything to cut our throats, because I mean, look at what he just did in completely outing his tribe.
Yeah, I mean, he showed who he is, which is Dante. I mean, it needs no further explanation. And Rob's information that he was giving, which, as we said, the idol thing was, I think, a really good lie that was undone by his brother on the other tribe. But then he also says that when they got rid of Paul, the other planned vote had been Stipe, which from our perspective was not true. Like, the vote was meant to be Nathan, but I was like, classic Rob doesn't even want to put Nathan's name out into the universe that this was even a conceivable option.
This was a really fantastic episode for Rob. And I thought at first, you know, how much of this was just Rob at the forefront of these decisions because of editing, and how much of it was him and Nicole together? Because I feel like Nicole, for being the big, you know, power player in the first two episodes, has sort of lost a bit of steam from an edit perspective. But there was a secret scene this week where Rob reveals, and Nicole speaks up to this as well, that the fantastic move to sort of mind freak Talo into sending Sipe to iOS to protect her from tribal council was his idea in the moment. And Rob is definitely, you know, I think he is, if Dante and Nathan are really losing ground with first impressions, Rob has more than gained theirs in just the way he's been able to, you know, spread this information and keep the information in his pocket as well, so that he comes across as someone who's willing to divulge secrets, but those secrets aren't actually true. And he's able to manipulate that information and just speak quickly in the moment to get what he wants done. I don't know how much he'll be able to keep doing that if people start becoming wise to things, but I thought he did a really great job of just using these quick reflex decisions this episode.
Yeah. I mean, I was in two minds with Rob, because he really did stick his neck out to save Sipe there, or to send it to the Island of Secrets. And I feel like people are kind of, you know, that's pretty obvious. People are reading that what he's doing, that he took the lead there to save a former ally, and that means that Saula are still really tight. But at the same time, I kind of have to check myself, because I feel like I'm being influenced by knowing that Sipe didn't need it. But it's like, if Sipe needs it and he saves her here, like, that is a massive move. And from his perspective, he doesn't know, so, like, it's worth the shot. Yeah. You know, if the other tribe had won, then, you know, that core faction of Jeff and Mike and Maba, I'm sure, would have exerted their dominance there to save Rose Lee. And as we know, that actually would have saved her, and we'd be saying how impactful that was. So I think just because, like, the results are into thinking that Sipe didn't need it, doesn't mean that this move is any... we should look any less positively on this move from Rob. I think, you know, he sticks his neck out, but he's such a huge target as it is. I think the lie was really good. And then, you know, he has this idol. I mean, Nicole said it's on their beach. We have to assume Rob has it. And, like, he really has no right to that idol. It's something Paul put around his neck, and now I guess it's his. So that's a very good thing for him.
Yeah, he has become super powerful with both information and idols, it seems. To go back to your point about choosing for iOS, I could understand how from an external perspective from those other two tribes, they might see it as very hollow of, oh, he's just saving his former tribe member. But I thought Rob did a really good job of spinning it to Ta'alo themselves of like, well, Dante Merrill, you talked about how much you hated Tanya, right? Like, this would be an opportunity to get rid of her, because I feel like, you know, if Tanya's not going, Sipe is. So let's get rid of the other option here. I think he did a really good job of logically explaining it where, yeah, it might have come across as a bit of an easy choice and a controlling choice to the other two tribes. But within Ta'alo themselves, they don't see it whatsoever. And that's going to, you know, do really well for them if they go to a tribal council. They're not going to think, oh, Rob was the one who, you know, was making decisions to protect his allies. They're just going to think, oh, Rob was looking out for us. He was helping get rid of, you know, the nuisance in our camp. And you know what? Maybe if when they come back and they see that Tanya's still there and Ta'alo wins again, maybe he'll convince them again to make a decision to save Sipe, to you know, get rid of Tanya. And it should be super interesting. But and on top of that, Rob makes he's the one who the Firemaker gives the flint over to Nathan. And as weird as it may be, it serves as something to endear himself to Saula as well. You know, they were sort of down and out when finding out that flint was gone, and Rob was able to be their salvation as well. So he was really being impactful in all three tribes this episode, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if he keeps sending Sipe, like, how will she get a message to him being like, please stop saving me? Like, I actually don't need to be saved. I actually really want to vote if they keep going with this mechanism, which they probably won't because Island of Secrets tends to be pretty diverse. But yeah, I think a good decision from him. And the fact that Tanya was so willingly, like, thrown under the bus by this tribe just shows how much it was a good decision not to choose to go to the strong tribe because she just didn't have an ally there. I do think just one last thing on Ta'alo is it kind of reminds me of the Shanlo dynamic on the Swap Korong tribe. It's like a guy and a girl from each of the three tribes. They might be pairs that are, you know, trying to recruit, you know, one of the other pairs to vote with them in a four. Letitia is an early target, but from secret scenes, we've seen that the men...
She always has been.
Yeah. And she'll always fly through and then she'll win. Go Letitia. But these men, which is just Rocco, Dante, and Rob, like, oh my God, like all the alpha males on one tribe, are already coming for each other. But much like Chanlo in Korong, I also think that they very possibly won't lose. So it might all be for naught. But some interesting tribe dynamics there.
Can we talk about iOS for a second?
Yeah.
Because I'm not terribly happy with what they did this episode.
Okay. Why?
I mean, it was the main reason why I wasn't too happy with Ghost Island last time. You know, and yes, Tanya, Sipe did miss Tribal Council, and they feel like that was the advantage in itself, but I just find it a little lame that you go to the island and you say, sorry, no game for you today. Have a nice day.
Mm.
And I feel like you don't need to necessarily put a bunch of advantages in the game. It could be something as small as like you've won, I don't know, a plate of cookies. Take as many back to the tribe as you want to and use that to broker information, or like just provide more material goods or maybe just pieces of information. Here's when the merge is. Here's when the next swap is. You know, you don't need to make it like extra votes and idols up the wazoo. I just don't, this makes me wary that we're going to have now episodes where nothing happens at Island of Secrets, which makes me a little sad because then that means we're dedicating time, even if it's only 2 minutes, to an island where nothing is going on and taking time away from the main stuff that's actually happening in the game.
Yeah, it's still impactful to me because of that decision that they're having to do to send someone because she is saved from Tribal Council. But I hear what you mean. I mean, we did get... I love what you're saying about giving information as an advantage. That's so cool. That's not something we really see utilized. We saw it last week that Tanya happened to find out about the swap, but I love that. Like, your advantage is that you know when the next swap is. That's such a good idea.
Yeah. That's just all from my online reality survivor game experience. Oh. So that I take it completely from my past lives there.
I feel like because we don't have a guest, it's my duty to tell you, Mike, that you're sad and that you don't have a life. I'm so sorry. I don't want to do
Thank
it.
Thank you. Let's clock it in, people. 1 hour, 10 minutes. That's a bit of a long time, but I'm ready to tick it off as our, you know, requisite opportunity to look at ourselves in the mirror and truly examine what we've been doing with our lives.
Couldn't not. I'm sorry. Yeah, we did actually get a question from Jason Gates, my brother/intern, kind of asking us to assess 4 episodes in Island of Secrets compared to, you know, the obvious analogies of Ghost Island or Exile Island or The Outpost. For me, The Outpost will always be my favorite because it had the cross-tribal dynamic every time. It was asking people to send their own members, so that was always dramatic. But then the fact that it was like two people from other tribes sharing a secret, I really, really liked that in the first episode of this season. And in Exile Alliances, where two people even just go to an island and nothing even happens, at least there's been, you know, other things happening there where they could make connections or they might share secrets. Like, there's always a dynamic there. So the cross-tribal dynamic, I think, is what elevates that. And that's what I'm looking for in these islands.
Yeah, and I know you were really excited about that in the first episode. And I do wonder maybe if they had done something where, you know, someone misses out on the reward from the second place tribe and goes to the Island of Secrets. Maybe that's a small tweak you can make, but I'm hopeful that next episode we'll get back to some more games of chance or temptations just to, you know, have more to work with on Island of Secrets. And hopefully this was just a one-time break and we're not doing a no game for you anytime soon.
And just imagine the Steers ad, which is that they send someone to Island of Secrets and they don't get Steers and they're just there on the island like sobbing for lack of Steers. I feel like that would have done really well on social media, which actually is a good segue for me to talk about Steers. Steers was in this episode. They kind of took their messaging from subliminal to liminal to superliminal, like, hey, you eat Steers, which was amazing. This scene, a lot of people wanted us to talk about the Steers scene, which was a lot. It was weirdly sexual. Am I the only one who thought that? Because to give you the quotes, what some people were saying, Rob said, my body was coming back. some things were switching on that had been off for a very long time now. What? What parts of Rob's body? Please don't make this. Please don't make that a Twitter account. I'm very, very scared that whenever I mention body parts on this podcast, they pop up to be Twitter accounts, and I can't communicate more with the Twitter accounts that are body parts. Like, I have a job.
Can't do Rob's off switch.
As long as it's a switch and not, you know, whatever. The point is, this was sexual. Dante said it's like his first kiss. He also looked right at the camera and was just like, wow. Also, Letitia dropping F-bombs. It was basically just like this multilingual, multi-camera ode to Sears, which was a lot, Mike. What did you think about this?
I mean, I'll admit, it made me a bit hungry and maybe horny for Sears. I say because Sears have horns. Get your mind out of the gutter. I'm surprised, though. Again, we don't have steers in the United States. I know Rick Devins and I are going to try to get in on some Uber Eats to get some steers to us, hopefully sooner rather than later. I did not realize that fast food restaurants could make ribs. Ribs seems to me like something you would order in a barbecue restaurant and wait like a good 20 minutes to get. I cannot imagine, outside of the McRib, which God knows what's in that, pulling around to your drive-thru and saying, yeah, give me about 24 ribs and a medium fry. Like, that's crazy to imagine.
No, but I think Steers is more of a restaurant. Can we get some confirmation about this from our South African listeners? Like, I've definitely sat in a Steers. I don't know if they have drive-thru.
Because I'm looking on their Wikipedia page, and it says Steers is one of South Africa's most recognizable quick service restaurant brands, which is basically a fast food restaurant.
Right. Well, maybe they just have quick service. I don't know. The food in South Africa is so good that they're just, you know, drive-through ribs. And I have to say that after making fun of, you know, what they've been comparing themselves to Island Food for a few weeks, like, it actually looked a lot better than Island Food. So, like, fair enough. And just a personal story. So we get a lot of South African products here because half my community is South African. So I went to my parents for dinner this week and we were having burgers. I was having a veggie burger and my mom brings out the sauce and it's a Spur sauce, which is Sears' direct competitor. I'm like, Mom, I can't eat this sauce. Like, I stan Sears. And she's looking at me like, just be normal for 5 seconds. Like, just eat your damn sauce. Like, I can't deal with it. It's really seeping into every facet of my life. But I was like, yeah, I mean, get a Sears sauce because I can't be helping the competitor because this is, the brands are clearly my thing. Come on.
Yeah, though I would be intrigued to see how much Sears sales spiked, particularly with their ribs. I just think the ribs choice was so interesting because I've heard so much and I've said so much about Sears burgers the past season and change, and now they just bring out a completely different menu item. That being said, I am glad that for this. Yeah, but I'm happy that at least, you know, they did provide the full barbecue set for the first place tribe. I'm glad for the second place tribe they actually cooked the ribs and that they didn't make them like try to cook it over this open flame, even though flame grill tastes better, I believe is one of their phrases.
They said it a million times, so.
I mean, this was fantastic in every sense of the word. I personally got hungry. I feel like this is, I think every food ambassador should want to market on Survivor, because what better captivated audience to wax profane and over the top about your product than people who are literally starving? Like, they got so many great sound bites out of them that might not be safe for print, but like could be perfect marketing blips about why Steers is so great. And so they definitely, I think, you know, made back their investment here with the ribs they brought out.
Oh, we will talk about how they utilize this content in the Biostrat Variety Hour coming up soon. But yeah, your ribs are very messy things to eat. And just like the close-ups of people's hands dripping with sauce, I was like, this has affirmed my vegetarianism personally. Like, for other people, if you felt like ribs, that's fine. But for me, I'm going another 13 years with the vegetarianism. Mm. And the funny thing I thought was, so we're at Ta'alo, they have this like really long, really sexual rib scene. And I'm like, wow, that was a lot of product placement. And then it's like cut to Sunula and it's like, and now they'll talk about Steers. I couldn't get away from it. Well, we'll talk about it when we get to the social media segment. But before we do, let's get to the chili, which is heating up. My brother is working super hard on the spreadsheet. This is something we talk about constantly in our house. I'll say it to myself. I'm sad and don't have a life. So that's fine. I'll spare you, Mike, from having to say that. I'll spare rib you that. Yes. I can't make meat puns. Like, this is not my domain.
Is that as a vegetarian, you have sworn off both meat and meat-based puns?
Yes. Exactly. I just broke my vegetarianism with a meat-based pun. I'm so sorry. All right. The Chizzy. I'm going to give 3 points to Tanya. And
Same. Ding, 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 ding. Double Jeopardy this week. I did as well.
Okay. So if you're giving 3 points to Tanya, we'll see how it's... I'm pretty sure that she's going to be leading the Chizzy because I have the scoreboard here. So with 3 points from both of us, she's on 10.
Yes!
Doesn't the Chizzy used to have meaning, but she was amazing in this episode. She was honestly like a new person. I don't think you should have given her points last week. I actually thought about, like, I'm like, Tanya was the best, but maybe I should deny her points because I really don't think she deserved the points last week.
Listen, I had the guests on my side last week, so we had the majority.
Ooh, let's try and start, like, making alliances to try and, like, help out of the Chizzy here. You know, one of the things that we thought about doing when we were, like, trying to work out how to do the Chizzy with guests is that we would just, like, do our points together. And I'm glad we didn't do that because we don't seem to agree a lot. But we agree that Tanya was great. She was the one bridging the gaps between Felix and Jacques and, like, making up and mending some of these relationships with Felix. Perfect tribe choice. Perfect connection with Cipe. Is now in the best position, I think, on their tribe with Cipe as clearly the tightest duo with, like, 3 other individuals to work with. I absolutely love what she did in this episode. And then to bring it down, you know, tangentially to that, I'm going to give Cipe 2 votes because, firstly, her old connections on Saula, which she completely earned, are what gave her safety here. Even if she didn't need it, she got it. And her connection with Tanya is huge. I don't think she ever would have gone here. I think that she was safe, even though she was the only, you know, Saula member on the new tribe. So I think, you know, Cipe are going to be running the game. I love the position they're in on this tribe. And then the 1 point I'm going to give to Rob, as I said, I've gone back and forth with it. He did expose his strategy, but if Cipe had been in trouble, he would have saved her here. We have to credit that. And yeah, loved his idol lie, even if it was being undone at the same time by Nathan. Love that he has the idol. I think that he had a really good episode. So that's, I think, a pretty clear 3. Jacques, I obviously commend for finding the idol, but I've said some bad things about what I feel he did after that, so I can't give him points. And that's it. Mike, who's getting your 2 and 1?
We were so close, Shannon, to being in perfect synchronicity. Ooh. I gave Rob 2 and Cipe 1, just because felt that I've been higher on Rob stuff than you, and just because
I'm very high on Rob. I want that on the record.
But I felt like, honestly, with what he did over the course, and just in that challenge alone, he has built goodwill across all 3 tribes, which is crazy to say. And if the thesis statement of this particular episode of the podcast is we believe that the decisions that are being made in each of these respective tribes is going to make so many waves with the other 2 tribes, and everyone's going to be constantly watching each other. If that's the game, I think Rob just put himself way out in front in a good way in the goodwill he made with everyone else in the game. So I feel like that earned him 2 points. I totally co-sign what you said about Sonya, Tipe, whatever you want to call them. I cannot wait for these 2 to conquer Laomei, the game, and beyond. And
life.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, giving Jacques 1 point, but I do think that it was one of those, like, 2 step forward and 2 steps back with him. He does have the idol in his pocket, and he is in the majority, but I think he still is not exactly in the best place socially. So I do wonder exactly what's going to become of him in the next few episodes, but I will give him an honorable mention here.
Yeah, so just to do the Chizzy leaderboard, and so please head to my Twitter because I'm going to start putting these spreadsheets out. People are demanding Chizzy charts. People are demanding spreadsheets as supplementary documents to these podcasts, and that's the kind of content we are giving you. So Tanya in the lead with 10, Cipe on 8, Jacques 7, Nathan 6 from that first episode, and now Rob is on 5. And I love Cipe is now coming second. She hasn't actually won a Chizzy yet. She hasn't gotten the most points in an episode, but she's been getting points basically since episode 2 every single time. I think she's playing such a good game. I love the way that she's using social connections. I just really love Cipe. I love the game that she's playing. Yeah. I love that it's, like, not front and center, but is clearly so good that it gets points every week to bring her up to second on the Chizzy chart. And I love that Tanya and Cipe are coming first and second in the Chizzy for life.
And I love the fact that Nathan's still hanging in there in third purely because he was so good in that first episode convincing everyone to vote off Lied, and then just a firm dive off a cliff there starting in the second episode.
Yeah, if he starts telling people more things, I'm going to start docking him Chizzy points. That's a thing I can now do. The Biostrath Variety Hour, let's get to it. So, there's no quiz this week because, honestly, all the tweets were just the sponsors being so friendly with each other, and they were so homogenous, it would just be impossible to make the quiz out of. So you ruined my quiz with your extreme friendliness, Biostrath. I'm going to now make a corner of shame. to call out the tweets that are just pandering to the other sponsors. It's honestly embarrassing. These sponsors need to start fighting, honestly. So Biostress, here is your corner of shame. They said, ooh, Steers SA, tag them. You came through. This is about the stakes. At Mahindra SA, can we get a lift so we can also get our hands on some bottomless ribs? And Biostress is always asking Mahindra for a lift. It's like, can we get them Uber? Can we work on getting Biostress Uber so that they can stop relying on Mahindra to get around?
Does Mahindra keep responding like new account who dis? No, Mahindra's like, how involved are they with these?
Mahindra's like, hey, Biostress, like, you know, because they're the two, especially. I'll get to Mahindra's corner of shame, but they're the two that are like, yeah,
we're building out a room where each brand is sent to a respective corner to sulk.
That's what literally in my notes here. I just have in capitals more shame, where I'm just like, you should be called out for the obvious pandering. This is not good content. Stop tagging each other and being nice to each other and start fighting. They also said, hey, Steers SA, can you help Saula ignite the flame? Or at Cape Union Mart, will you come to the rescue? And I actually kind of like this because it sounds like it's challenging them to some sort of fire duel. So this is the one tweet where I'm like, are they saying who's better at fire? You know, which is important in Survivor. Is it Steers or is it Cape Union Mart? So people, please go to this tweet and like, let's start igniting this flame, bringing back the biases on this tweet. You know, who manages fire better between these two brands?
So Cape Town Union Mart, you said it's sort of like a big box store, like sort of like a Walmart.
Yes, I don't know. Who do you think?
Well,
I
would say like, if, I don't know if there should be, I could understand why Steers is like, oh, Flame Grilled always tastes better. I don't know if I want a big, you know, chain store to be affiliated with fire. That feels a bit too dangerous for me.
Are they serving ribs in the store? I only know of these accounts from their social media presences, which I have to say is not a lot. Like, I'm going to say it now. Biostress didn't tweet between the two Survivor episodes. That's it. All their content is live tweeting Survivor. There was nothing else. There was no other product placement in the week between episodes.
Are we sure this is even like a brand that exists outside of Survivor?
No,
I'm not
don't
sure
know.
That Survivors were like, we're going to come up with a shell brand, like a shell corporation called Biostress. We don't know what it is. Nobody will, but we'll use it to sort of funnel our live tweets through it.
Yes. Oh my God. That's the best explanation of what Biostress is that I've heard yet. Like, this makes so much sense to me, finally.
Yes, it is the ghost account of Survivor South Africa.
Makes so much sense. And also, like, they keep tagging the other sponsors, so that means it's like a different way that they can give, like, you know, coverage to the actual sponsors. This is amazing. I love how Dural is, you know, a stick made into a person, and now this is canon as well. They also said that this just proves it more. They said new buffs, new tribe, new strategies. At Mahindra SA, do you think the castaways are hashtag always up for a challenge? Like, they're literally using the hashtag of the other brand. Like, just worry about your own product. None of us know what it is that you do. Please give us more information into your actual brand.
How far do you think we're going to get down the corporate rabbit hole before, instead of Nico saying, you guys ready to get to your next challenge, he'll say, are you guys always up for a challenge?
Oh, you just put that out into the universe. Like, firstly, he should definitely do that. Like, it's a different thing on, you know, that can be like his new Nicoism. And yeah, people wouldn't even know that they're being, you know, sold to. It won't be like what Steers was doing this episode. They'll just be thinking, am I always up for a challenge? And then they'll buy a Mahindra. Amazing.
I miss the days where Tom was providing, you know, little taglines for cameras. those days seem to be in the past now.
All right. So Biostress also tweeted saying, it seems Lao Mei doesn't have the stamina or energy to beat these chickens. At Steers SA, since you guys are the flame grilled chicken gurus, can you help these guys out? And Steers also said, the castaways are probably thinking the chicken should be flame grilled. So now, like, the sponsors are getting a little murdery of chickens, and I don't love that. I feel like they wouldn't be winning the Sia fan award, but I do think maybe Sia should come in and give like the anti-Sia award. So it's like every season Sia will give money to the person who's kindest to the chickens, and then Sia can come in and just give money to the person who killed the most chickens, and it will just even out.
Yes, the AIS award, where it goes to the person who killed the most animals in the island. I think that makes a lot of sense. This coming from the vegetarian, of course.
Yeah, I hate putting this out into the universe, but like, imagine if that was a thing. Like, you know, we talked about people who starting freeing the chickens to try and win Sia's money. Imagine if it was just like, get on the islands, like, all right, where the chickens? I want to win $10,000 or $14,000.
Yeah. I don't even want to eat them. I'm just going to like, I'm just for chickens. Sport.
Yeah. Oh my God. I feel like I put that, and that this might be something that exists. Like, if this happens and people start killing chickens, I'm going to undo all my vegetarianism and I might have to quit podcasting.
Yeah, you just actively encourage Survivor contestants to kill wild animals.
So far from my values, I can't tell you. I just think that, like, anyway, it's just good branding for Sears if they make an award like this. So the shame for Mahindra, they said, okay, they literally tagged all the sponsors. They said the ultimate hashtag Survivor SA adventure kit, at Biostrat tablets to get you going, at Cape Union Mark barbecue set to get the grill on, at Sears barbecue and monkey gland sauce for that real food taste, and then Mahindra XUV3. Yeah.
Monkey yeah. gland sauce?
Okay, so I knew I would have to explain this.
Is this the sauce that you insisted on at your family's barbecue?
All right. So monkey gland sauce is a South African thing. I actually Googled it to see what it was. And the first thing was, it was like, has nothing to do with monkeys. Google was very much like, we get this question a lot. It's actually not a monkey thing. It's just like garlic and onion and stuff. Like, it's not a monkey thing. I knew I would have to explain that. But it's actually, like, I've never had it. But I guess, like, my brother and my dad eat it. It's there's no monkeys. So
at the time the sauce was developed, there was a lot of speculation in the popular medical press regarding the use of monkey gland as a means of keeping young due to the pseudoscience of Russian quack doctor Serge Voronov.
Where are we with this? How do we get to this part of the podcast? That's good.
We're learning so much about monkey. Who knew that maybe this sauce can also serve as like formaldehyde for monkey glands?
Yeah, okay, well, thank you, Mahindra, for bringing that to our attention, but stop tagging the other sponsors. Also, Mahindra, for at least to their credit, try to shoehorn their products into their tweets rather than just, like, badly tweeting about focus and energy. They said, when you can't trust anyone on the island, you can trust a Mahindra double cab pickup.
Like, all right, I like that. That was going to be, you can't trust anybody, drive away in a Mahindra car.
Yeah. So, like, those two things are not related, but at least I admire the effort. Cape Union Mart almost exclusively tweets about Jacques, which I guess he is the main character, but what? They're just like, yeah, they're like, ooh, Jacques played his idol. Ooh, they're getting mad at Jacques. Ooh, now Jacques finds another idol. It's like, there are other people on the show, Cape Union Mart.
Wow. Cape Union Mart is sort of like, maybe if there is a fan favorite award from them, I think we know who's got it.
Well, I'm glad that you said that, because Cape Union Mart are actually giving relevant content as well as bad, vague Jacques tweets, because they're giving, like, buffs as prizes. Like, this week they were like, who do you think is going home tonight? And if you get it right, we'll give you a Ta'alo buff. So, well, like, they'll choose one winner. So this might only be open to South Africans, but, like, actually do follow them, because that would be a really good prize. Like, everyone should do that. That's relevant content. And to get to general social media, now we're getting to beyond the sponsors. So this is a personal story, which is that I was looking at who follows a Survivor foot account, and I noticed that Darrow follows it, and he didn't follow me. So I tweeted, you know, first I texted Mike, and I feel like people are getting a real sense of what it's like to work with me, that I would just text Mike, like, yeah, I just realized that Darrow is following the Survivor foot account and not me, and I'm offended by this. So I tweeted that. So the foot account then retweeted it and tagged Darrow to kind of, like, A, like, shame him, and I guess, like, shame me. And then Darrow...
See, this is what the brand should be doing, you know? Like,
calling
bring
everything
out to the open, people. Do what the body parts are doing.
Yeah, so then Darrow did follow me, and then he like, retweeted it with an embarrassed emoji, and then I tweeted saying, how would I explain this interaction to anyone in my life? Like, this interaction between me, Darrow, the former stick, and the Survivor foot account is like, I talk to the Survivor foot account now more than my friends and family.
We should also say, new development, there's now a new Hair of Nathan Survivor account based on our discussion with Tevin last week.
I also love that people have started counting how many times I say Biostrat in the podcast compared to Mike and the guests. Last week, I said it 28 times, and Mike and Tevin said it a combined 6. So this is hilarious to me. I have thought about just starting the podcast like, hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, and I'm here to talk about Biostrat and just kind of, like, get it out in the open and just tell everyone why we're actually here.
I think that'd be a good idea, sort of put everything out in the open. I know Dante would appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, I literally had that vision where I was like, this is an 18-week season, and my Biostrat obsession just devolves every single week. And it's like, by the end, am I literally just going to be 100% Biostrat and 0% Survivor? Maybe.
Well, now I'm interested. You want Biostrat to follow you. I want Steers to send me some of that monkey gland sauce, because I have a few tests I need to do now.
My mom can get you Spursals. Do you want that?
No, that stuff is garbage sauce.
Yeah. So speaking of Biostrath following me, people have been tagging Biostrath in tweets about how they should follow me, about how I'm a bio stan, about how like I always talk about Biostrath on the podcast, and like they just ignore it. And like, I know you're not missing any mentions with 1,000 followers, Biostrath. So
you only tweet about Survivor South Africa. You're not looking at many other news items there.
You respond to a lot of other people. It's like, don't pretend that there's not a crazy stalker girl obsessed with your brand talking about it on a podcast every week. This is something you have to know is now happening. Please acknowledge me. Please follow me back. Come on.
This is very much a notice me senpai or notice me CPay moment here.
Yeah, and you know, often I see tweets like engaging with the sponsors, like live tweets that are like, ooh, see, that does look good. And I'm like, oh, is there someone who listens to the podcast is kind of playing around with it? And like, nope, it just seems like the people who are, you know, genuinely engaging with the sponsors, which is a little crazy to me.
Would you, how furious would you be if the foot of Nathan Survivor account?
Oh my God, do not put it out in the universe. If they follow the foot account and not me, I'm done. Like, I'm quitting the podcast. So I'm just saying that, like,
should we also, I don't want to suggest too many more accounts, but I know that the great Marion, listener and participant in Survivor South Africa Champions season, has suggested a Rob's Eye Survivor account.
Yeah, I mean, look, Rob's body of parts as Survivor accounts, I shouldn't put it out into the universe. Like, I don't want this. It's too much for me to keep up with.
No, you know what should happen? I think someone should take Rob's eyes and use at Survivor Rob, because now apparently that handle is up for grabs.
Oh my God, yeah, I was texting Mike. Mike has to deal with me so much. It's actually, I feel so bad for Mike. You guys should feel bad for Mike. So
I love it.
No, you don't. It's impossible that you would love it. I text Mike, like, Mike, Rob changed his account after we talked about it at length with American Rob to at Rob Bentil instead of at Rob Survivor.
So now that thing's open, I'm just saying, let's grab it right now. In fact, you know what? Maybe I'm going to grab it right now. I'm going to sit on it and let's see if we can turn it into something fun by the end of this.
I love that he changed it. I feel so bad. It's like we really have an effect on people. So yeah, at Rob Survivor is now open for grabs. Oh my God. Just one more thing on social media and then we'll get to the question. So I follow Rose on Twitter. I've been trying to follow all the contestants. And her handle is just Santon, CSI. Santon, actually the area that I grew up in. So anyway, so I always forget that it's her. And it's like the content that she's giving is like, for example, South African murder hotspots, like break-in tips and like cartoon crime scenes where you have to work out what happened. So it's just like on my news feed. So I spend a few seconds trying to work out if this cartoon crime scene is a murder or a suicide. Then I'm like, wait, what am I doing? Why is this on my timeline? Who is this person? And then every time I remember that it's Rose. So like, I guess now I'm still following her, but it's just a very weird injection of content into my news feed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's something to break up all the sponsor tweets, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly sponsors. Like, I will say, like, if you want to go follow Cape Union Mart because they're giving away buffs, like, be prepared for it to screw with your who to follow. Because my who to follow is now just, like, all South African brands. Spur actually at the top. I guess I know that I'm eating the sauce. I will admit I did eat the sauce. It was really good. Sorry, Sears. It just, anyway, my mom told me to eat the sauce. It was yum. But that is the social media segment for this week. Yeah, got the bio stress out of my system. All right, let's get to the questions. Nick Fishman says, if you had the ultimate say, how long would you keep these tribes together before a swap or a merge?
It's a good question, because I guess the question is, are we going to assume like a merge at 13? Because there are 21 people. And, you know, with Survivor cast at 20, they now usually do a merge at 13.
Yeah.
It feels like, do we think we swap too early? Because now if we do keep these tribes until 13, that's through like 5 or 6 episodes. Then we're getting to like Australian Survivor 2016 territory, where they did a bunch of swaps early on and then stayed an inordinate amount of time in one particular configuration.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of ready to see some new dynamics. I definitely don't want to stay this way till the swap. That would be, I mean, till the merge, that would be a lot. I think keep it like this for like another 2 episodes, then swap maybe at like 15 to 2 tribes of 2 and maybe the other, I mean, 2 tribes of 7. And then the other person goes to maybe Island of Secrets, and then keep that till about 13 or 12. And then, yeah, maybe see some new dynamics there. I mean, with a really, really long pre-merge, even getting to a major merge, because it's so many episodes, you need another swap before the merge, I think.
That being said, last season, you know, they had 3 tribal councils, then swapped, then stayed in those configurations for, what, 5 episodes, with the exception of that double swap that they did when Martinez quit.
Yeah, I count that as a swap, though.
Yeah, and we saw, though, that, like, they went into, you know, the merge with 3 tribes, with 1 tribe having 2 people left on it. So yeah. I could see a situation where they decide to do that. I mean, it could be very interesting considering how these people are, that once the numbers get down there, maybe we see more crazy stuff happen, or it could be the complete opposite and things just get, it's more like the Oolong thing where things just get, you know, dragged down more and more each week. But I'm hopeful there's one more swap, maybe a couple of rounds before the merge, just to mix things up one more time before we throw them into the chaos of the completely individual game.
Yeah, with such a long season, I think multiple swaps is good. Otherwise, we can just get a bit too stagnant. There's so many episodes, like, let's diversify it as much as possible. Ryan Stanley says, if Jacques had been sent to Island of Secrets, do Felix and Tanya still work together for this vote?
Yes, completely. Yeah. Because, again, Tanya's mentality was not necessarily like, I don't care if it's Felix, I don't care if it's the chicken murderer, I'm sticking to Alo no matter what. That's what I want to show to everybody else. And so I think she was ready to work with whoever. And so I could very much see it would be her, Felix, and Sipay as the three in control. I know they had their personal differences in the past, but I feel like Tanya is really trying to turn over a new leaf and try to say, you know what, you may have been annoyed with me before, but let me prove to you how loyal I can be. So I think that was her plan going in. No matter who she was, you know, sitting next to, I do not think that Jacques was really the common link there as much as you might think.
Yeah, I mean, we also got a question from Aaron Paulson, kind of similar, saying, if Sipay comes back and votes, does anything change? Do we still lose Rose Lee? I think yes. Like, if anything, maybe then they could have split a vote. But I definitely think that the only thing I see changing, the only cog that I see kind of changing this if they get sent to Island of Secrets is Tanya. She really, really was the glue, and I think that's what could have actually broken the game a different way. But otherwise, yeah. I think she, with Tanya at the center and still being there, like, this was the outcome that was going to happen, and that's why she's our cheesy winner for the week.
And I would also say that I think if she had gone, I mean, she seemed to be the one from the edit who also suggested Rose over Darrow. Maybe they get convinced to get rid of Darrow just because of how bad he screwed up that first part of the challenge, which was pretty bad. If we're talking about one of the biggest F-ups in Survivor history, I think that has to be up there with, like, Jamie Newton in Guatemala, who was haplessly sawing away at that rope in that one reward challenge while the other tribe completed the challenge entirely. Like, that was a pretty bad screw up, and good on the rest of the tribe for making it up. It makes me excited because I worried a bit with these random swaps if one tribe is going to overwhelm the others, but it seems like even Big Beefy Ta'alo, not to be confused with Big Beefy Steers, that they were going to overpower the other tribes, but it was very close. We got down to one crate each for these three tribes. So I think, despite maybe Laomei not having the biggest manpower, it seems like they're all sort of up to snuff when it comes to these challenges.
Yeah, I mean, look, he screwed up walking a plank. Like, that's a completely new challenge we've never even seen in Survivor history before. I don't feel like we're going to see that skill again. Like, it's not like, wow, he's really bad at swimming or puzzles or something that will screw you over every time. So, like, while you can be annoyed about it, I don't feel like that would have... I feel like Rose was the obvious choice in terms of maybe what Darrow can bring in challenges compared to her. So I feel like either way, this was just not Rose's episode, unless Nuala had won the challenge, and I really feel like Rose would have been sent to Island of Secrets and they would have saved her. So that's the other way that this could have broken.
Yeah, she would have been saved by the very allies that she was looking to jump from.
Yeah, I know that she was not accepting that love. They were like, you're in the majority, and she was like, I play this game alone. Like, if anything, she seemed like most connected to Darrow on this episode more than any of them, which is bizarre. Rose and Darrow, really just like the ultimate duo of all time. You know, you've got Tom and Palesa, you've got the T-Pay duo we've got going now, and just put Rose and Darrow on the giant statues.
I'm here for DeRose, absolutely.
DeRose, that's a late contender for the hashtag, because what is the hashtag now that we are done with the questions? Hashtag DeRose, hashtag Dantra. You had so many good ones this week, Mike. Hashtag Jacques Put, hashtag I don't even know what this was meant to be. What did we say? Jockets? What was it?
Oh yeah, Jacques instead of pockets. Oh, but that would just be Jacques with the T in front of the S.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I love looking at my hashtags being like, what are we talking about? Like, these are just variations on Jacques' name. Like, I don't know what this was. I like Jacques Put. What do you think?
Jacques, we could do Jacques Put. Could we do something with Darrow as a stick?
Darrow as a stick.
Could it just be hashtag Darrow as a stick?
How do you spell Darrow? Is it
D-A-D-U-R-A-O.
D-U... is it that? He follows me now. I should know this, and I follow him, but...
Yeah, now he's going to unfollow you now that he knows you won't be able to spell his name.
Okay, well, look up how to spell Darrow, because I don't know if Mike is right. Hashtag Darrow is a stick, or hashtag Jacques Put. I also like hashtag Ghost of Ting Ting Alliance, but it's a little long.
Just a little long. We meet our lanes with hashtag Darrell is a stick.
Darrell is a stick. Which he is. It's canon. If you listen to this podcast, you have to believe it to be true. So next week, we have probably, in fact, very probably, Bryce Isaiah is our guest. So I'm sad he wasn't here this episode to talk about the sexual steers porn, but I do definitely want to get into the debate, Rocco versus Rob, talk about all the contestants. Like, I'm very hyped for this.
This is going to be fantastic. Bryce is always a hoot, no matter what podcast he's on. I'm sure he has plenty of thoughts at this point, both physically, strategically, and everything in between. And the guy is just fun to listen to. I'm sure we will go off the rails many times, hear about his many work stories and how they compare to Survivor. So I cannot wait to welcome Bryce into International Survivor next week.
Yeah, like, actually a dream come true, really, for me. He's one of my favorite podcasters, and I'm just going to just sit here and hardly even mention Biostrath, probably, and just listen to Bryce's thoughts.
Nope, you cannot resist that. That is your addiction.
For Bryce, I feel about Biostrath like Bryce does about Indolite, you know? Like, we can compare our love for these two brands, and I can ask him how he got Indolite to kind of recognize him as a person, which is what I'm really aiming for. Cut to them, you know, following the foot account. I can't even think about that happening.
It might be, I'm putting too many things out in the universe. We'll see how many come true in the next week or so.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, Mike has to deal with a lot. He's going to get messages from me like, Mike, I'm jealous of the foot account. Help me. Pray for Mike.
That's one of those things that you frame and you're like, can't believe someone actually told me that and I understood the context behind it. I'm jealous of the foot account.
That's what I'm saying. My life is so divorced from everything else in my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, every story that's relevant to me is just impossible. I can't talk to my friends. Like, they're like, what's going on in your life? I'm like, well, Mnet, the foot account, where did it even start? You know, like, I'm untethered from society at this point. So follow me for that craziness.
This is a very like steers like mentality where you're just at your wit's end, like, this is, should brought into my brand a bit more.
Yes, this is the kind of content I can provide. Also, just, you know, general Survivor South Africa content, and we can check together if Biostrath finally follow me. This is a call out for the listeners to follow me and for Biostrath, and subscribe to the International Survivor Rehapups feed and the Reality TV Rehapups feed so you get more of this nonsense every week. Follow Mike at AMikeBloomType. Mike, what else is going on for you in the podcast world?
We just finished up this season of RuPaul's Drag Race with myself, Brent Wolgamott, and Liana Boris, which was a lot of fun. We also just covered this episode of The Amazing Race, which was its most Survivor-based episode ever, in that there was a vote. And we talked through all of the good, bad, and ugly that went through with that vote, as well as some more beautiful running through the Swiss Alps with Rob and Jess. A lot of fun with that, as per usual. So check that all out. And yeah, at a Mike Bloom type or at Survivor Rob. I'm gonna sit on this now that I got this idea. So check it out. I'm sure we'll figure out something to do with this placeholder account by the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm really loving The Amazing Race as someone who's come back to it in this season, Mike. I'm loving your recaps. Another thing that Mike has to contend with is me just sending him random Amazing Race questions. Just like in the middle of the day, Mike is up with his baby in the middle of the night dealing with adult life, and he just gets messages from me about the Survivor foot account. Also, like, hey, in The Amazing Race, like, how much money do they win for other placements? Do they get separated at the pit stop? Like, so many. And Mike did not know what he was signing up for when he signed on to do the Survivor South Africa podcast. And I think about the fact that he's like been jailed here with me all the time, and I'm grateful for it.
There's no one I would rather share a cell with. And quite frankly, your Amazing Race questions do break up your foot post. So I'm happy about that.
Oh, I'm such a handful. No pun intended. Yeah, no, footfall. Okay, just hashtag that too. Whatever. We'll just hashtag all of these puns. We'll see you next week for episode 4 with Bryce. Thanks, Mike, to you as always for doing this podcast with me and for putting up with me. And thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes as well. We will see you next week. Bye.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds, like the breathable, silky, smooth Tree Dasher, the responsive foam and extra grip of the Tree Runner, or the classic low-top look of the Tree Piper. Allbirds has a lightweight, ultra-packable shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.